Nature Deficit Disorder. Among the costs of alienation from nature are diminished use of the senses, attention difficulties, and higher rates of physical and emotional illnesses. The digital age that purports to connect us seems instead to have ushered in an era of disconnection to our environment, increased violence, deepening divides, and alarming suicide rates. A culture that keeps us tethered to technology and its constant stream of information makes the ability to unplug a vital component of a healthy society. Colorado's Western Slope offers unparalleled opportunities to escape to the outdoors as home to 3 national conservation areas. Yet despite this wealth of outdoor access, a large number of us face obstacles to connecting with the public lands. Faced with multiple threats to our public health and the health of our fragile ecosystems, it seems more important now than ever to engender connection to the land, to preserve not only our own well-being, but the well-being of our natural landscapes, by cultivating generations of stewards who utilize them respectfully and appreciate their value. Welcome to the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. I'm Gretchen Reist, guiding you over the divide and into the diverse terrain of the American West. In episode 13, To Conserve and Connect, we'll explore Colorado Canyons Association's ongoing mission of engaging the community in the great outdoors with Development Director Killian Rush, and take a look back at the organization's beginnings with an introduction by outgoing founding director Joe Newhoff. Learn how the art of finding common ground can get people and organizations across the political spectrum working together for positive change.
I'm Joe Newhoff. I'm the founder of Colorado Canyons Association. I'm originally from Philadelphia. I grew up on the East Coast. I did my undergrad and at the University of Maine in New England. And then in 2003, I moved to Boulder for grad school. Spent a couple years in Boulder. After getting my degree, I took a position in Grand Junction back in 2005, 2006, and I've been here ever since. You know, the desert's always been a big part of, where I'm comfortable, where I enjoy recreating. I love the landscape. I like the big open spaces. So it didn't take me long to adjust to Grand Junction. One of the things about Grand Junction that did take a little bit of time was, you know, it really is a focus, or it was a focus for me to spend as much time I could out on the public lands recreating. And so, you know, if you want to have, and it's getting better, but I think if you want to have some of those big city amenities, you know, Grand Junction's still a little bit limited. So, you know, sometimes I miss those pieces, but hey, there's no traffic, there's lots of trails, and I can get out on my bike whenever I want. So that's pretty nice. I got my graduate degree in environmental leadership. And so before coming to Colorado, I had run an organization on the Chesapeake Bay that did volunteer watershed cleanup. And after grad school, my goal was to, you know, stay in Colorado and be able to be a leader in a conservation nonprofit. So I moved to Grand Junction and ran the Western Slope for what's now called Conservation Colorado for 5 years. And as I was doing that job, I volunteered on a board of directors for Friends of McInnis Canyons. And McInnis Canyons is one of our 3 NCAs, and it's right outside of town. It's where the Cocopelli trails are. It's Ruby Horse Thief, and the Colorado River runs right through it. It's a beautiful place. And so after being on the board of Friends of McInnis Canyons for a couple years, a few of us saw the potential for something much bigger, for having a bigger vision for all 3 of the national conservation areas and getting more kids outside and doing more stewardship work and having paid staff. And so in 2010, a few board members and I wrote a big grant. We received the grant and we launched Colorado Canyons Association, and I became the first executive director. The amount of emphasis the community has on connecting to the riverfront is really great, and you can see it happening really every month or every week now. There's development going on at Las Colonias, and there's more of an emphasis on the riverfront area. So our organization focuses more on the more of the backcountry stretches of the river. Colorado Canyons Association focuses on the three national conservation areas that we have in western Colorado: McInnis Canyons, Dominguez Escalante, and Gunnison Gorge National Conservation Areas. It's the only place in the country where there's three NCAs within an hour's drive of one another. These are areas that are set aside by Congress for their conservation values. And so they're very special. They're the BLM's version of the national parks. And so not many people really know what a national conservation area is still. You know, I think we're still getting that fluency with what even Bureau of Land Management land is and how that's different than Forest Service or Park Service. So, you know, one of the things that we're focused on are these three NCAs. The nature of the river that runs through the NCAs is more of a backcountry type of reality, where you have these beautiful steep Red Rock canyons and you know, this the beautiful Gunnison and Colorado River that's running through the NCAs. So the Gunnison River runs through Gunny Gorge and Dominguez, and the Colorado River obviously runs through McInnis Canyons NCA. So one of the things that's been a big change that I've seen along the river in our areas is a couple years ago, the BLM switched to a permit system for camping in Ruby Horsethief. Ruby Horse, don't quote me on this, but I think that Ruby Horsethief sees over 20,000 visitors per year on boats. And so what was happening is that as that stretch increased in popularity and people came really from all over the world to boat in our backyard, is conflicts over camping. There would be confusion over signing up for campsites. There wasn't a formal permit system. People didn't really have skin in the game, so they would bounce from one spot to the next. And, you know, we saw some pretty nasty conflicts on the river. And thankfully, the BLM and the community came together and put forth a permit system. And so now you can go online, you can get a permit, you know you're going to camp for the night. It's really increased the quality of experience for recreationists on that river. Now on the Gunnison River, through the other two NCAs, the Gunny Gorge stretch is world class. It's class four rapids. It's a gold medal trout fishery. Jimmy Carter used to come fish that stretch every year. It's a really famous stretch of river. And then the lower Gunnison that runs through Dominguez Escalante, which is kind of just in between Grand Junction and Delta. That's a stretch that's seeing more activity. You know, I think at some point we're going to be looking at some type of permit system for that river as well. But I think it tells a story from a recreation economic development standpoint. What we're seeing is increased interest in recreating on our public lands, and in particular, our three national conservation areas. And so the challenge that we have is how do we preserve and protect these places? Because they're important for critters and for other things besides just bikes and feet and boats. And so, and then how do we also maintain the quality of experience for people that are coming here? You know, people, I think, come to Grand Junction instead of places like Moab sometimes because you have some of the same amenities on trails and on the river, but you don't have the crowds. And so, but the crowds are probably coming, and we're seeing that more and more at different times of year. So, you know, for us to step back as a community and think about how we want to grow and how we want to still maintain the great experience that people have come to expect in the on the public lands is something that's really important to us. You know, we're a conservation organization, but we're a conservation organization that works well with all different types of public land interests. We work really well with both, you know, major political parties. We have Senator Gardner's staff coming out to volunteer as educators, and we have Senator Bennett's staff coming out to volunteer as educators. We have support from Congressman Tipton. We have support from our local Mesa County commissioners and other commissioners. Our largest business funder this year is Chevron. But, you know, we also have wilderness advocates on our board. We have quiet use folks that give generously to the organization. And, you know, I like to think about CCA as a place where, you know, anyone that cares about public land and kids can you know, put their money and their time in and see a great return on that. I'd say first, just anecdotally, we launched our big new, we're a river outfitter on the Colorado and Gunnison River. We have professional certified river educators and guides. We have boats. We have a private camp on Ruby Horse Thief where we take mostly school kids from the area to do science adventures. And so we launched our river program last year, and there was very little water in the river. So it was really a challenging year for us to get that program up and running. Last year, you know, what we're seeing is overall is this huge variance, you know, in weather patterns and a changing climate. And so for us, you know, on a very practical level, we're affected. You know, when we have a exceptionally rainy year and the river's flowing at 40 to 50,000 CFS, and then the next year there's no water in the river, those have real practical implications for the programs that we do, getting kids outside. I would say on a broader policy perspective, our focus as an organization is making sure that we engage the community to care about our public lands. And I think that climate change is a threat. It's a threat to the health of our public lands. It's a threat to us being able to maintain our protected areas in a way that still provides habitat for, you know, plants and animals and the type of recreation experience that people want. So, you know, on a broader perspective, I think we're worried about it because we do see it affecting the quality of the health of the national conservation areas. From a policy perspective, you know, climate change is something that we talk about as an organization in, you know, the changes that we see on the ground. We do weather and climate modules as part of our STEM-based education with kids, and we do talk about the changing climate. What we don't do, and there are a number of other organizations that do speak up very effectively on policy, is we don't enter into the policy debate on climate change. We think it's an important debate, but we think that there should be organizations like ours that exist where, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on or where you're at on climate change, you can still support getting kids outside, you can still support cleaning up our rivers, and you can still support organizations like ours. We're really appreciative of all the support that we have. We couldn't do it without strong community support and great partnerships with everyone from the Bureau of Land Management to District 51. So, you know, our emphasis and my emphasis really is pointed towards partnerships and being a good community, responsible community partner. So,
Killian, welcome to Crossing the Divide. We are here today to talk a little bit about Colorado Canyons Association. But before we get started with that, give us a little bit of your history and background.
Hey, Gretchen, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. So I grew up in Colorado Springs, and I moved out to Grand Junction back in 2013. I went to Colorado Mesa University and studied environmental science with a minor in watershed science. And I began working at Colorado Canyons Association back in 2016.
Yeah. So when you entered your program at CMU, did you have an idea of what type of job you wanted to get coming out?
I had no idea. I knew that I really cared about the environment and that I wanted to work in it. And I felt like my sense of purpose came from connecting people to the environment. And I didn't exactly know what that would look like. And so I feel really lucky that I got a job with CCA pretty much before I graduated, actually. I did a summer internship with them. And before I even graduated, I was working at CCA and just kind of launched right into it. And it was pretty awesome.
Did you say that you had done that through, was it an AmeriCorps program?
It was, yeah. So I did an AmeriCorps summer associate position for 3 months. And then CCA was hiring for Avista, which is a volunteer in service to America. And so the AmeriCorps Avista program aims to alleviate poverty in the community. And so I did 2 years of Avista with CCA and did a lot of program stuff. And then I was recently hired in September as their development coordinator.
So what CCA does, how do you feel that ties into reducing poverty in the community if this was a Avista? How do you guys make that connection?
Yeah, so CCA, you know, we take over 3,000 local students out each year. And a lot of these students are largely underfunded and underserved. Most, I would say, a little I would say roughly half are minority students that don't necessarily have the resources or the opportunity to get outdoors and engage on their public lands. So our work is really addressed at making sure that we tap into those communities and populations that don't have those resources, and we're providing them the chance to engage and experience the natural world around us.
I have read in recent years about the lack of minority participation in outdoor recreation activities. It wasn't something I ever really thought of. What do you think is behind that in the work that you've done? Have you come to a greater understanding of why that is?
Yeah, I think there's a somewhat of a discrepancy because, you know, people think when you live in Colorado that all of these families and kids are just outdoors all the time, that, you know, everyone has the opportunity to go hiking or biking. But a lot of families are really focused on that. They're focused on their family, and they're focused on providing like their immediate needs to their family: food, water, shelter, school, and anything extra, you know, is that it's extra. It just comes when it can. And if you don't necessarily have the knowledge of how to engage in the outdoors, you're less likely to go and do it. And so I think it is an economic thing, and it's also a demographics. Yeah, it has a lot to do with demographics. And I think the other piece is when you look at public lands, the majority of people engaging out there are white. And so if you don't see somebody that looks like you or comes from your class or comes from your background, you're less likely to, you know, have some sort of a role model or a connection to that place. And so I think we aim to show that it doesn't matter where you come from, what background you have, what your social class is, or anything like that. Like, public lands are just that. They're public. They're your land. And anytime that we start an education event, we always start it with, you know, who do you think this land belongs to? And it's always you. This is your land. And I think once kids have that recognition of like, oh, I have a stake in this, then they go back to their families and they're like, did you know that we own land? Like, we have this place that we get to go play on. And so kids are actually going back to their families, and like, they come to us and they're like, oh, I'm going to take my family out here. And so it's really exciting.
It's an interesting point that you make too. This is a little off topic, but it's an argument that I saw come up with the rec center, where some people who opposed the idea for various reasons, one of the reasons that they would give is, look around us. We have all this natural beauty. Get outside. So I think it's really important to note that just because it's here doesn't mean that everybody is engaging with it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting because I've actually been talking, and this is also a side note, I'm going back to grad school, and I want to focus my master's project on increasing diversity on public lands. I feel very lucky to work for an organization that has recognized that this is a problem, and there's like a niche for this where we can take those kids and work with families and work with partner organizations and make sure that even if your family doesn't have the means or the resources or the knowledge to take their kids outdoors, like, we can still provide that opportunity for them.
How was it for you growing up? Did you grow up in an active family? Or is that how you got engaged with the outdoors?
It is. Yeah. Both my parents were really active. I just remember being a kid on my dad's back, hiking, and both my parents were river guides. So we were always rafting and always skiing and camping and biking, and we were always outside. And I think for a long time, as a child, you don't necessarily, when that's all you do, you don't recognize how much it impacts you. But as I grew up and really, you know, started to come into myself, I realized that like, these are the places that make me feel like whole and like myself. And so And also that just like nature provides such a therapeutic benefit to connecting with the world around you, and honestly, even with people around you, that it just became like, this is what I want to do. I want to make sure that everybody has some sort of a connection to place and a sense of themselves as they relate to the world around them.
What do you think some of the biggest dangers are of generations of kids who grow up without that connection to the outdoors?
You know, like when growing up as a kid, we were always encouraged to go ride our bikes and go be outside. We didn't have screens that we were on 24/7. Like, we were creating our own experience with our friends, and without that connection to being outdoors, and without that playfulness, and without that kind of imaginative experience of, you know, being an explorer or being a pioneer or you know, somebody that engages in the outdoors, you lack a sense of connection to place and how you can situate yourself in a greater world. I think through technology these days, it's really just changed the way that we interact with each other. It's changed the way that we care for our planet, and it's changed the way that we just engage as a whole. When you are out in the backcountry for hours or days at a time, I think you connect to yourself in a deeper way. You have a greater self-reflection, greater like time to really dive into like the things that you care about. When you have nothing presented in front of you, you have to create it for yourself. And we took partners' kids down, and these, you know, kids are highly impacted, trauma. They're coming from bad social circles. They're just highly impacted youth. And we did a 3-day, 2-night rafting trip with them last year. And on the first day, it was really challenging. These kids were fighting and explosive drama. It was really remarkable to see like the impact that society has had on, you know, kids ranging from 8 to 14. And the first day was, you know, it was challenging. There was a lot of conflict. And by the second day, the transformation in these kids from being away from their home lives or being away out in the backcountry and away from phones and away from technology was so remarkable. They were playing in the sand and they were playing with each other and they're playing games and they're just, they finally have a chance to be kids. And I think that in this day and age, kids don't necessarily get to be kids the way that they used to anymore. I think we have to provide those experiences to grow and engage with the world in a way that we were, you know, naturally designed to. I started running trips through CCA back in 2016. Yep, that's when I started. And I think the first trip I went on was a day-long rafting trip on Ruby Horse Thief, and we went down with some kids from Riverside Educational Center. And pretty immediately, a lot of these kids have never been on the river. It's, at first, it's very exciting, and then it's like, oh gosh, we've been out here all day. Like, I'm tired. I kind of want to go home. Like, we don't let kids bring their phones, and so it's like a huge disconnect from the technological world that, you know, we are in every day. And I saw, you know, even across that first day, like a massive variance of like, oh, this is exciting. Oh, this is draining. Oh, I want to come back. Oh, I don't want to go home. And like just the multi stages of, you know, what you experience when you're outdoors. So that was the first summer I had a group of kids. My favorite story is we were on a bunch of inflatable kayaks, and myself and my coworker, we were kind of the lead ducky, and we had three inflatable kayaks behind us. They're called duckies, and there were two kids in each ducky behind us. And, you know, we want to make sure that they're staying in the current, that they're staying away from the banks. And so I was like, okay, come on, my little ducklings. And so all these kids started calling me Mama Duck. And so now I'm known at Riverside Educational Center with some of these kids as Mama Duck.
It's a high honor.
It is. I know. I know. They come up to me, they give me a big hug, and they're like, Mama Duck. And it's just brings my heart so much warmth. And that first trip, I had two kids, Edgar and Rosa, and I noticed that at first they were really kind of shy. They didn't want to necessarily engage with us. They were really focused on just kind of making sure they weren't in the way. And the next summer, we went on another trip, and they came back, and they were like, "Mama Duck, like, we're so happy you're out here again. We can't wait to go on this trip with you. Like, we're just so happy to be out here." And we're like, "This is great." And so last summer, we went back out, and, you know, same thing again. They came running up, and Edgar was just about to graduate high school and get a full ride scholarship at CMU. And he was like, "I really want to work for the outdoor program. I really want to take other kids outside, and the impact that you've had on me, I want to make sure that other kids have that opportunity." And Rosa really wants to become a raft guide, and she wants to go down the river and take other people boating. And so it's been really fun to watch them grow up and grow into these places that they recognize as, you know, their backyard. And it just warms my heart. It makes me so proud.
It seems to me like they went from almost feeling it was a place that they didn't belong to then taking ownership of it and saying, "I can then take the next step and be the next steward of
exactly
of the lands."
Yeah. Yeah. And they're both youth leaders with REC's program, and we're doing a trip to do some leadership development with them. And it's pretty funny because I've, you know, as a development coordinator, I've really gotten off of the program side, and, you know, we've hired guides and we've hired new people to come in as staff. And I saw them a couple weeks ago, and they're like, "Are you coming on this trip with us?" And I was like, "Oh, yes, I'll be there. I will be there. We can go on a trip together." And so they always make sure that if they're going on a trip, I'm going to be there with them. And yeah, it's really fun to watch them grow as stewards, and the next, you know, generation of caretakers of our public lands. When we take students outside, we want to make sure that we're teaching them in a way that minimizes the impact of the environment. So we go to classrooms, we do pre-classroom visits and teach them about Leave No Trace and how to visit with respect. And when we go out, we make sure that we're staying on the trail, and that when we teach students how to engage in the outdoors, that we're doing it in a responsible way that generates the next stewards of these landscapes.
We've talked a lot about your programs that you do for students. I'm assuming some of those are probably privately organized. Do you have programs for adults?
We do. Yeah, we actually launched our adventure series last year, which is programs for adults. It's hikes, and it could be hikes, trips, like rafting trips, interpretive lectures, all sorts of different ways to make sure that, you know, while we are getting kids outside, we're also getting adults outside. So we work with Museums of Western Colorado. We work with many other different partners in the valley to make sure that we're providing equal opportunity for the community members of this area as well. So we, this year, have 6 or 7 trips. We're doing an intro to fly fishing class. We're trying to really tap into the different interests of people in this valley and giving them an opportunity to experience and learn more about their public lands in a way that maybe they've never done before. And, you know, these are fully outfitted. We provide all the meals. We provide beverages, local wine, local beer. We really try to locally source our food. And it's just I think it's a really cool way, if you've never been out in our national conservation areas before, it's a really cool and unique way to get out and do so.
Do you find many older people who come and say that they have never really gotten outdoors much and feel like in their lives they haven't, this is the first time maybe they're making that deep connection with the outdoors?
Totally. Yeah. It's really cool. It's really interesting the way that we've created this community to make sure that you know that these public lands exist and that they're yours to engage on. Maybe you go hike you know, in Devil's Canyon or at Opal Hill, or in, you know, go ride your bike on the Kokopelli, but you've never gone on a rafting trip through Ruby Horsethief. And we're just making sure that we provide ample information to all of the members of this community that these really unique and special places, you know, exist in right in our backyard, and they're relatively free to use. So, you know, while the national conservation areas are managed for multiple use recreation, you can go hiking, biking, boating, horseback riding, ATVing, and they're also all dog friendly. So these are areas that you can take your dog on a rafting trip, and you can take them hiking, and you can take your dog, you know, into places that some places you can't. And we do a lot of work around making sure that people know that these are places that are, you know, open and available to take your pups.
When you look at the current state of our, I guess you would call it, riparian ecosystem, mm-hmm. what do you see as the biggest threats to that?
We have tamarisk and Russian olive and a lot of non-native plants that have really taken over the ecosystems of these areas. And so I think we work with some really great partners like Western Colorado Conservation Corps, Rivers Edge West, and with the Bureau of Land Management to identify areas along the Colorado and Gunnison Rivers that are severely impacted by these non-native invasive plants, and work with these partners to, you know, remove these sometimes hundreds of acres of tamarisk. And then we do monitoring and stewardship trips where we take, you know, citizens down for what we call citizen science. And so maybe you've never, you know, maybe you don't know a whole lot about tamarisk, but we would take you on a trip and you could learn how we monitor sites that we've removed invasive species on. And you do vegetation surveys, and we look at these areas and just kind of assess how they're doing post-treatment, and are really just trying to make sure that we revitalize these areas in a way that's in conjunction with the Bureau of Land Management's protocols, and making them a nicer place to recreate on and enjoy.
Let's jump to you now as development director.
Yeah.
What challenges do you face in trying to grow the organization? What have you found? Because I think it's kind of a new position for you, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
I had no idea that I was going to be fundraising. I think Joe saw the fact that I can build relationships with people of any nature well as an inherent talent. You know, I was trained as a scientist. I worked on data and data collection and doing like the hard sciences. And now I'm shifting to working with people and fundraising and providing a clear ask for why we need support for these programs. I think right now, you know, my challenge is making sure that people know what they're supporting and that they see a return on investment. So, you know, if you give us money, you actually see something happening with your money. A lot of people support getting kids outside, and I think a lot of that comes in numbers. When CCA initially started, we took like 300 kids out a year, and now we're taking almost 4,000 kids.
Wow, out. That's huge.
It's huge. It's a huge gap or huge jump in 10 years. Yeah, I mean, it's a learn as I go sort of thing. Coming through starting as a program person and now transitioning to a development person, I've really had a unique opportunity to see the full spectrum of how CCA operates. And so from a program side, it's making sure that we are reaching as many kids as possible, that we're providing them the opportunity to see their backyard in a whole new light. And I think for a lot of us at CCA, our favorite thing is decompressing in the backcountry and taking time away from the reality of our world and the crazy and busy lives that we all lead, and just going outside and sleeping under the stars. And I think for us is we want to provide that opportunity to everyone who wants it. And so I think as we grow and continue to expand, creating new programs like backpacking and just different programs that really provide a deeper, more than a day long, you know, education trip, but providing a deeper experience where they, you know, who have, kids or adults or elderly can have that opportunity to be outdoors and decompress and just tap into themselves and into nature. And on the development spectrum, I want to see a continuance of broad, diverse support for our work. Something that I'm working on right now is really expanding our business supporters and the businesses in this community who support environmental education or who support getting kids outside, and making sure that there are companies in this valley that support the work that we do, and yeah, just growing our membership base and building relationships with people who share these same values with us. And I think by doing that program piece and by doing the development spectrum, you create a wholesome conversation and create an inclusive conversation that, going back to like no matter where you come from or what your class or you know race is, that everybody has a place in the outdoors.
Do you feel that there's a large amount of awareness within the community about what CCA is doing?
I think it's growing. For a long time, I don't think a lot of people knew who we were, what we do. And even, you know, today at events, when we go table and provide information about CCA, some people come up and they're like, oh yeah, I know about your organization and I know what you guys do and I love what you do and I support your work. And some people are like, I've lived here for 15 years and I've never heard of you. So it's, for us, it's trying to figure out how we communicate to the community what we're doing, and that we make sure that we talk about it in a way, like Joe said, that we're addressing all of the recreation interests and all of the people in this community as a whole, and making sure that every voice is heard at the table, because these are public lands and they're managed for recreation and they're managed for education and you know, science and archaeology, and there can't be any voice missing. So it's, yeah, it's gaining large, broad spectrum support for our work and making sure that we can continue to do what we do.
Killian, thank you so much for being here with me today and giving us more information about the wonderful things that Colorado Canyons Association is doing in the community. And for anyone out there who's listening who might want to find out more about what you do or get involved in one of those programs, where can they find information about you?
They can go to coloradocanyonsassociation.org, or you can call our office line at 970-263-7902. We're also on Facebook, Instagram. I think we have a Twitter handle, but I don't think anybody's really active on it. yeah, and you know, I'd like to also say that we're always looking for volunteers, whether you're interested in getting out and teaching kids at one of our education events, or you're interested in coming down on the river and doing a river stewardship cleanup with us. We're always looking to, if you can't necessarily provide financial support, we would love to have you engage in a volunteer role or anything like that.
Best of luck to you guys.
Thanks, Gretchen. Yeah, we have a bunch of trips going out in the next couple of weeks, and we're really excited about it. So thanks so much for having me, and yeah, come check us out.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. Access our full lineup of conversations by searching Crossing the Divide on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and Spotify. Hit subscribe to stay plugged in to each new episode. Follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook and Instagram to keep up on podcast releases and access exclusive video and photography. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West. Support for Crossing the Divide's official podcast comes from Rocky Mountain PBS, Mesa County Libraries, and the Daily Sentinel. This podcast was recorded at Mesa County Libraries 970 West Studio.